Hello and welcome back to Tech Days Online for our last session of the day. I'm joined by Mike Does Big Data, my very good friend, Dr. Michael Rees, who has come up with this amazing thing called U-SQL. And I thought T-SQL was everything. Michael, what is this and what's it all about? You have 45 minutes on your chosen subject.
Thank you, Andrew. And it's a pleasure to talk to you all about U-SQL, which is not called U-SQL because of U coming after T, but for some other reasons that I will be explaining as part of the presentation. My name is, as we got introduced, Michael Rees. I'm a principal program manager in the Microsoft Big Data team, and you can reach me on the Twitter handle and on the email address that you see on the screen here. So let me first quickly talk a little bit more about the environment in which we actually offer U-SQL to kind of give you an insight into why we think that we need yet another query language. Over the last couple of years, people have started to develop a new paradigm called the data lake approach. Now, it's not really that new, and it's basically an augmentation to the existing data warehousing paradigms that have been around for a while. The main idea is that you have now so many data sources of different types of data, not all just relational data, that you want to process and analyze and basically build your own data warehouses on for future analytics. However, in the traditional data warehousing approaches where you basically do a schema first design, you schematize the data, you store it in your favorite star schema, and then you can only answer the questions that that star schema is designed to be answering. The data lake gives you the ability to always go back to the original data formats and create new data marts when new questions come about that you want to have answers for. In addition, you can also use the data in the lake to do things like data mining and experimental analysis, where you try to find out what are the questions that you actually want to have answered on the data. So it gives you even like more experimentation capabilities as well. So on the data lake, you basically want to get the data in its original format into that store. Storage is fairly cheap and nowadays fairly unlimited. And then you basically schematize on read when you want to do the analytics. So you basically then create your data marts as part of a data processing, data cooking job. That is normally done with batch queries, and then you basically put your interactive queries and real-time analytics on top of it. In addition, you can do machine learning and other cognitive processing of your data to learn more about the data that you might have inside your store and inside your lake, and trying to find out what you actually want to have answered and what are the interesting things, the interesting questions to ask. So Microsoft now has provided an Azure Data Lake offering in the context of Azure based on our own internal big data platform. And obviously our goal is to make the big data processing easy, that we can perform analytics on any data at any scale and size, to make it very easy for users to get productive on day one, but then also be able to be productive at day 100 when you have to go and operationalize and debug and performance tune your analytics part, and provide you with a lot of enterprise level features such as integration into Azure Active Directory for doing permission checking, etc. Now, the Azure Data Lake components that we have in Azure are three. We have the storage layer, which is a web HDFS based cloud scale store that allows you to store your files in folders and folders. You get web HDFS APIs, so you can connect to it from other web HDFS clients as well. It's integrated with OAuth and with Azure Active Directory for authorization and authentication. Then on top of those, we have basically two analytics services. The one service that you might already have heard of is the HD Insight service, which is our open source Hadoop cluster service that gives you the ability to do Hive, Spark, Storm, Kafka, and any of the other Pokemons in the Hadoop zoo. And then on the other hand, we have the Azure Data Lake Analytics Service, which is a job-based service where you scale and pay on a per-job basis. And the language that we expose there is U-SQL. And so just as a first kind of hint at what the U might stand for, U-SQL is our tool that allows us to dive deep into the data lake to basically do analytics and to do your data preparation and data cooking as well. So let's quickly take a look at the Azure Data Lake and U-SQL at scale. Can we do cuts or?
This is all live, Mike.
This is all live. Good.
Yep. You've got a couple of thousand, at least a couple of thousand people watching you.
Okay, awesome. I wasn't sure about that. let's go and take a look quickly at my browser here. Let me bring that up and open a new browser. And let's go and open the portal. That's the first way of approaching basically U-SQL and the Azure Data Lake. Mm-hmm. And what I have here is now I basically have my Microsoft Azure portal, and you can see on the screen here, once it starts populating, it's a little bit slower than I hoped. You will see that I now have here a couple of new Azure Data Lake Analytics accounts and Data Lake Store accounts here. You might also see that there is an Emrest West Europe account. This is just in preparation of the launch of our European data centers coming later in this quarter. If I click on one of these, you can see kind of some additional information about my jobs. You have over here on the right-hand side, you see the job history. So I submitted apparently two jobs a few days ago, one that succeeded and one that failed. And there was a little bit of compute hour spent, not a much. And I can go into, for example, the details of the jobs. So I can see each one of the jobs that have been running. And you can see here is a little bit more history. So I had a total of 67 jobs, 32 succeeded, 33 failed. Now, I have to say here that mostly they fail because I tried to make them fail, because I tried to do something with them to see what the system actually does. And so this is hopefully not the normal behavior that you might see. In addition, then down here, you also see the details of the jobs. I can click on one of these jobs here. Let's see, this one here ran for 11 minutes. And let's see what it was doing. So first I see this job view here. It tells me that it was operating on some files. And it apparently operated on those files in parallel. What you can see here, if you go into the job folder, job view here, and then it did some aggregation at the end. And if I look a little bit more at the details here, I can take a look at the script, for example, and then I open the script, and then you see basically your first U-SQL script. Now, this one was using some code generated in a code behind file, which we'll see later. So there's a lot of automatic assembly registration done. And then this was an extract statement that was extracting over 1,000 columns, or almost 1,000 columns, over some file set with a special extractor. I hope the company mentioned here doesn't mind me showing that. This was just a test for them showing how to do file sets, etc. And then I basically do a select star where some columns are not equal to each other. So as you can see, it's a very simple experience here. It also is easy to get started. If you are at the top of your Azure Data Lake account here, we have a couple of sample scripts that we have predispositioned here that you can use. For example, you can query your TSV files, etc. Some search log and ads type stuff. And you can also even play around with some additional extensions around cognition, et cetera. So that should give you a first glance at how uSQL looks like. Now, the rest of the session, what I want to do is I want to kind of talk a little bit about what is uSQL, why did we do that, show you the philosophy of uSQL, and demonstrate you some of the power and simplicity of uSQL by giving you some demos and examples. So one of the things that we've done during the time when we were doing our own big data processing within Microsoft in a system called Cosmos, which we started for Bing, but now every single business unit in Microsoft basically is using that for doing their big data analytics, we noticed that many of these use cases are not easily served by existing kind of relational processing systems, not just because of the scale of the problem, like that you have to potentially scale out to terabytes and petabytes of data, but also because you want to be able to process all kinds of data, not just relational data. You might want to do feature extractions. You might want to do complex attack pattern analysis over web logs and potentially other data sources that you might get that all have different types of formats underlying it. And you always want to do that with some custom proprietary algorithms that you might not be able to easily express using SQL language. So our goal then basically is to give you kind of a system and a language that makes this very easy, that allows you to easily process any type of data, use your custom algorithms easily, and then be able to scale those custom algorithms to any size and be efficient. So if you look at the existing SQL landscape for big data, such as Hive or SQL MapReduce and some others, the nice thing about those languages is that they are declarative and therefore give you an abstraction that hides the scaling and parallelization from you. So you basically just say, apply this query to this data, and the system kind of auto-scales it out to the data size that you have. On the negative side, though, is that the extensibility is often an afterthought on those languages and are bolted on and not native. It makes it very hard to operate on them and to add your own custom extensions. As an example, you have to go and patch your Hive server if you want to add a custom aggregator. That's not something that is easily deployable or can even be done by a normal programmer. That's actually something that your Hive Hadoop administrator will have to do for every time he wants to basically bring up a Hive instance. On the other hand, you have programming languages for big data, such as, for example, MapReduce paradigms, libraries, up to things like Spark, where you start out with a language and then have link-like extensions in them. But you're basically starting out with a language that is very easy to extend and write custom code because you are writing C#, Scala, Java, etc. But you don't have a lot of declarativity in this context. I mean, even in the context of Spark, where you have link expressions going into data frames or so, often if those data frames do not fit into memory, then you will really have to know how that code works. And if you have Python code or Java code around it, then the system cannot really reason across those boundaries between the declarative part and the programming part, and cannot do a global optimal optimization of the problem. So other problems is if they start adding SQL, it's normally just a string, and you don't have any tooling support with IntelliSense or anything like that. So uSQL, we think, is giving you the benefits of both. It gives you the declarativity of the SQL language and the extensibility that and ease of use that you get by using a familiar programming language as the way to do your extensibility, and then have constructs in the language that allows you to very easily scale that out over the data that you have. So the official reason why it's called unifying, why it's called uSQL is because it unifies the unstructured and structured data processing, the declarative SQL and custom imperative code. Currently, primarily built in is C#, but we also have ways for you to call out into Python and R and some other languages as well. And we also give you the ability to actually unify querying over local data and remote data living in other environments as well. And we'll get into that a little bit on a subsequent slide. So to continue the origin of uSQL, uSQL obviously didn't get invented out of the blue. It has a little bit of a history behind it. First, it evolved out of Scope, which was our own Microsoft internal big data language. While they, as all internal languages, have a lot of like ad hoc decisions and ad hoc designs to make a certain use case work for a certain customer internally, we had to clean the language up and make it a language that we can be proud to share with external customers. So that's basically where what uSQL became. Now, Scope already gave us the SQL and C# integration model that we now have cleaned up and improved on. It also gives us the optimization and scaling model that we are using in uSQL. And just to kind of show you how that kind of scale and optimization works, we have currently inside Microsoft over 100,000 of jobs daily running Scope queries. And at some point in time, there will also be uSQL queries joining that. And they are operating over several exabytes of data that is stored inside our big data system. And some of these jobs touch like 1 petabyte of data or so. So there's a really big scale capability there that is being run. Then we also looked at other big data languages, just as Hive. So Hive basically gives us complex data types, maps and arrays. We also are looking at aligning the data formats. For now, we have aligned with the text formats, so CSV formats that we have a way of reading the null escaping inside a Hive CSV file and vice versa. And right now, we are working on integrating with some more complex formats such as Parquet and ORC. We also looked at T-SQL and ANSI SQL. Primarily, many of the SQL capabilities, such as the windowing functions, the metadata model, et cetera, pivot, unpivot, we kind of want to kind of provide in uSQL in a familiar way so that if somebody comes from a T-SQL background, for example, it's going to be fairly easy to get the hang of uSQL as well. Now, one thing I mentioned earlier is that we can do both data locally to my uSQL data store, which is in the Azure Data Lake storage account, and also some remote store places. Now, the currently supported remote store places are Azure Data Lake, both your own account as potentially other accounts that you have access to. Windows Azure Blob Store, you can write and read data from. That is obviously important if you have other tools within the Azure ecosystem or your own ecosystem that work in Azure, but only with Blob Store so far and have not migrated yet to Azure Data Lake storage. And we also give you the ability to do federated queries against tables and views inside SQL Server instances in Azure, meaning SQL Server in Azure VMs, Azure SQL DB, and Azure SQL Data Warehouse. Now, this also gives us the ability to basically access data that you might not want to move into a data lake because you kind of want to rather have the data in its original place and just want to have a virtualized view over the data. We will actually push down, for example, SQL predicates and filters and joins, et cetera, down into these remote sources if the query optimizer finds it useful and you as the user allow it to be moved down. There's a trade-off here between performance and semantic correctness, et cetera. So there's a little bit of some design choices that you can make to do that. So these are kind of at the high level what uSQL gives us. Now, I probably talked enough, so let me quickly switch over to some uSQL demo. And I will be showing you a demo where I do some analysis of some Twitter data. Now, most of the code that I will be writing, you will be able to see on this URI at our GitHub site, so you can basically go back and play around with it later yourself. So For that, I start my new instance of Visual Studio. You can use any version of Visual Studio 2013 and 15. We are currently working on integrating it with 2017 as well. That means you can even do your coding with Visual Studio Community Edition. In addition, you will have to go and download our Azure Data Lake tool for Visual Studio on our MSDN page. And once you have that, you basically can have your full-fledged uSQL development environment in Visual Studio, which includes the ability to run your uSQL code locally on your local machine as well. So let's start quickly with setting up a new uSQL project. So I go to New Project. And now one thing that installing that uSQL tool gives us is it gives us a whole new set of Azure Data Lake templates for Hive, Pig, Storm, and uSQL, which is the one that I'm interested in. I then go and basically select the uSQL project here and create one of those. Let me say OK here. And what that does is now it basically creates a project within the uSQL application solution that, as we will show, see hopefully in a second, contains the ability to write uSQL scripts and submit them. I see that it's busy. Mm-hmm. Okay, here it is. So let me first show you over here on the right side in the Solution Explorer what you're seeing here. What you see here is you basically have that project. You can have more than one uSQL project inside the solution. And then down here you have a script.uSQL file. Now this one has a triangle in front. So let's see what is behind that triangle. Let me open that quickly. And you now see that there is a script.uSQL.cs code behind file. Now, some of you might be familiar with the notion of a code behind file, which means that you can write code that gets then by the tool associated with the script itself so that you can invoke that almost transparently from within the script without having to do all the registration and bindings and references and all that stuff yourself. So the only thing is you have to write it there. We'll show you that in a minute, hopefully. So now let's increase the font size here a little bit. And then let's think about what we actually want to do. We want to go and access some data inside my samples folder. So I go into my samples folder here. This is now browsing through the Azure Data Lake storage account that is associated with my analytics account. In this case, I think it's my West EU account here. And you see in this folder here, I have a couple of files that are all ending tweet.csv. So let's drill into one of those. And as you can see, the format is fairly simple. I have some date, time, who tweeted, and the tweet itself. So fairly simple. So let me now go and write a script that does some interesting investigations about the tweets. In particular, let me see how many times somebody got mentioned inside those tweets. So the first thing I need to do is I need to schematize that CSV file. In uSQL, we have an extract statement, so you can do that without actually having to go and create a metadata object like a table. You can just say something like at t equals extract. And now the thing I'm adding here is basically the date string, time string, author string, tweet string. Now I read that from a file. I will copy the location in a minute from the Explorer. And I have to provide now some custom code that is going to parse the file and transforms it into this row set. Now, we have built in some extractors for file formats like CSV, so I'm using that. But if I have a custom file format, I can go and write my own custom extractor and invoke that. Now, I can copy the relative path paste that in here, and voila, I already have schematized my file here. Now, at the end, since this is currently only a patch service, I have to output my result to some location. So let's say output result.csv. Again, I provide an outputter, this time, again, a built-in one called CSV. And now what I have to do is I have to transform my T into my result here. Now, if I would be doing a calculation, counting the number of authors inside that file, I would just say address equals select author, comma, count star as tweet count from at T by and author. If I would do that, voila, I would have written a simple SQL statement to basically do this transformation. Now, while you're looking at this script, one thing that is important to notice is even though I have three statements here, these two assignments, and then the output statement of the last assignment here, this all gets executed as a single statement. Basically, these names here are just named expressions. And they will be composed into a single execution tree, which then gives us a global view of the script for optimization purposes. So I can easily, the optimizer can easily move predicates into other places earlier to the extraction, for example, can do column pruning, all kinds of things that if you would do that step-by-step execution, you would not be able to do so. So this kind of gives us a very highly optimizable, yet simple to write script experience. But now I didn't want to count the authors. I wanted to count the people that got mentioned inside the tweets. Now, this is obviously something that is hidden inside the tweet itself. Now, how do I get to this? Well, use SQL because, as you notice up here, the data types of my scalar values are C-sharp data types, in this particular case string, I can very easily use C-sharp now to extract things out of that tweet. So what I can do is I can extract my mentions in two steps. The first step is I go and use my tweet dot, and now I parse my tweet into extract the mentions. As you can see here, as soon as I dot into my string data type, all my string methods of the string class is becoming available to me in USQL from C#. So I can now say split, for example, split by spaces, so I get my words. And now I have an innumerable of strings containing the words, so I can apply a link expression where clause, where I say only give me those x's back where the x starts with an ampersand, which is the sign for being tweeted at or being mentioned inside a tweet. Now, this is an innumerable of string. In USQL, the only data types that we can flow are the built-in data types, and that's called SQL array here for USQL. So I cast this into USQL string data type and give this a name, mentions, and then obviously I have to get this from my T's up there. So now this at M gives me one row per tweet containing an array of all the mentions in it. Now the array might be zero or might contain 20 references. So now what I want to do is to use my count group by, I need to pivot my arrays into one row per element. Now this I can do with some USQL / TSQL like magic. So I reuse my M name here. And now I say select mention from my old M, cross apply. Now cross apply you might be familiar with in SQL Server. What this does is it takes a table valued expression on the right hand side and applies it for every row on the left hand side. Now, in this case, the expression I want is an explode on dimensions. I have to give some names here. Now, what this does is it basically now explodes, takes an array, and pivots each element inside the array in its own row. And then the cross apply just applies it over the whole row set that I calculated up here. And now I have my row set. Now I can go and change my thing down here. So instead of saying select author count, I can say select mention count star. And now, of course, this is a mention count. And this is now from add m group by mention. And then maybe I do my output here order by mention count descending. So now let's submit this. I can choose different locations to submit it up here. So the default would be local. If I do my development, I probably want to do this, run this job locally first before I, until I know that I have the right code written. And then, because of course I know that my code is correct, I will go and select a specific account to submit this to. So let me submit this. And now you see another thing about the tooling here. I mean, uSQL has some of the most advanced tooling that I have seen for any big data system, or probably the most advanced tooling. So right now what you see here is it's basically a job view that shows you the progress of how uSQL is, the job uSQL is being processed. You already see here that it has goes through four stages. The first one is the preparation stage where we do the compilation and optimization. Then it gets put into a queue. And then once it comes out of the queue, it will be run. And then at the end, there's some cleanup happening around like stitching the files back together, etc. Now, as you can see here, this job was submitted with a degree of parallelism of about 5. This is something that you can set on submission. In the tool here, the default is 5. In this example, since I only have one file that is fairly small, 5 is probably already over provisioned. And then, oops, it's already done here. So over here, you see the job graph. Now, you can see here is my input file, and then down here is my output file. I can double click on this. It will download the file and show you the result here. And so you see here the top people that got tweeted that inside my context here. Yeah, see. And now this is a little bit older. Otherwise, I think Mr. DeepFat would be higher up in the list. And if you click on this vertex view, which is basically a unit that can be parallelized, you will see the local nodes query plan. Now, in this case, it's actually a lot of stuff that is happening within that single vertex. It extracts with my custom extractor, with that built-in extractor from the file. It does some projection. It does all the C# application. It does the cross-apply. It does some grouping here so that it can do the group by. And then it does some sorter at the end to do the output sorting. And then at the end, it does the output. So this is, in this case, done in all a single, in a single vertex. Obviously, more complex job graphs might have a lot of different stages and vertices that it's executing on. So now the next thing I can do is I can just go and say, well, maybe that's not enough. So let's go and go back to the presentation and continue a little bit more. So just to recap, what I've shown you here is that we basically do this automatic inlining. So you get actually a full execution graph that is a single directed acyclic graph that shows you the query. You see an example here in the slide. Maybe let me quickly zoom in a little bit so you can see a little bit more what this looks like. So you can see here I have a lot of different selects and unions and some joins, etc., all operating on that data. And if I then go and actually execute that, I get a job graph that looks a little bit more complicated like this one down here. So in this case, you can see I read from several hundred files here on the inside. I have many different stages and vertices that do. And I can turn in the tool heat map, different heat maps on to see where most of the time is being spent for processing, for reading, for writing, etc. And that way I can identify bottlenecks inside my script and start working on that as well. So there's a lot of tooling around there that allows me to go and fine-tune and figure out what the job is actually doing. So yeah, I've seen that I can do unstructured file. Schema on read with an extractor here. Now, we have built-in extractors, but there's also custom extractors. And we have a few custom extractors on our GitHub site, which is usql.io, where you can get JSON, XML, and Avro extractors currently available. And then some sample extractors just for showing how to write your own custom extractors. You can also write into the file, and again, this is similarly done using an output statement, and again, we have built-in and custom outputters. Now, the file paths that you specify are either file paths relative to your default Azure Data Lake storage account, or you can give absolute paths to either another Azure Data Lake storage account, where you just have to then have access to through your Active Directory entry, or Windows Azure Blob Store accounts, which have to be registered with your Azure Data Lake account so that the storage key becomes accessible and you can access the containers and the accounts. Now, NewSQL obviously is highly extensible. So you've seen now just how easy it is to use C# expressions inside my select statement. But of course, after a while, I probably don't know anymore what the what this C# expression actually means. Mm-hmm. So maybe I just want to go and wrap that into a function. So I can do this fairly quickly. I probably want to expose that through a namespace called tweet analysis, maybe a class UDFs, and then have get mentions of tweet. And in order to be able to do that, I now have to go into my code behind file. Let me increase that font size quickly. Say tweet analysis, then add a new public class. And I called that UDFs, I think. And then in here, I have a static public method that is called get, which is returning a SQL array of type string called get mentions, takes a string called tweet. Now I just add my return clause here. I just paste what I copied earlier. And that's it. That's my method. And now if I go and submit that script again, it will now basically use that code behind file to do so. Now, as a next step, I can go and take that code behind file, put it into a separate C# class. So while this is doing that, let me quickly do this. So I add a new project to the solution. This time I'm using a class library for USQL applications. Let's call this tweet analysis. Okay. Okay, now this has already been pre-populated with some pattern here, but I'm not really interested in that. What I actually do is I go copy all of that code behind file, put that into this class here. Then I build it quickly just to make sure that my C# is correct. My laptop is a little bit slow today. So it succeeded. So now I can right-click on this class and zoom into the register assembly statement, which I get here. So that now allows me to register this code inside my account here. So let's just go to one of those accounts, for example. And I can give that an assembly name. So this is now registering that inside my database for reuse. So I can now reuse that with other people share it with other people inside my organization by just registering it once after I'm done with developing the code. And then other people can just reference to that if they have access to the corresponding database. And then my script will just have to have a reference statement added at the beginning here. So I would say reference assembly tweet analysis, since I'm inside the same database here. And then I could submit that as well, and it would behave the same as before, just without the code behind file. So obviously that has to be removed when you submit that. You can also write your own user-defined aggregates, your own user-defined operators. Unfortunately, we don't have enough time to show you that today, but I definitely have no problem coming back and give some more detailed presentations on that as well. So we already shown you that, the creation of the assembly, etc. You can reference .NET framework assemblies. We have a small set of them pre-deployed, so you don't have to reference them explicitly. Others that might not be frequently used, but are still useful in some contexts, you can reference with reference system assembly, such as, for example, system.xml. And you can enumerate those assemblies through our SDKs, PowerShell command, Studio Server Explorer, Cloud Explorer, and the portal as well. I can show you that maybe in a second now that the registration has completed. I can go into my Server Explorer, for example. I can, actually I need to quickly change my subscription here. For some reason, Visual Studio always defaults to the first one in the list when I open it. And now I can go into my Data Lake Analytics accounts. There are way too many because I am a member of some internal subscriptions that just kept me a lot here. Uh-huh. Now, the one that I was using was called Emery's West EU. I go and open my USQL databases down here. There's only a master database, which is the default my database, and I can go and open my assemblies here. As you can see, I have a lot of assemblies registered here, including our Cognition API assemblies to do face recognition, image OCR, image tagging, etc. Key text sentiment analysis. You can all basically get the Cognition, not the Cognition APIs, but the actual code that lays behind the Cognition APIs installed into your Azure Data Lake account, and then you can scale it out over your data, be it text or images. And down here is the tweet analysis assembly that I just registered a minute ago. So let me, and then you can drop the assembly. And Visual Studio makes the registration easy, obviously, as you have seen earlier. Now, let me quickly jump over the using clause here. This is just a way for you to have an easier way to write things that have long namespace names, etc. And the last thing I wanted to show you is you can now scale this out over more than one file. So if I go back here to my script that I had originally, and let me quickly remove the reference assembly and still use the code behind for a bit. I can just add a wildcard here. So I can, for example, say star, and then I operate on all the files that end in tweets.csv, or I can even give this a name and expose this as a column. Origin stream. And then I can, for example, put a predicate down here that says where origin in, and I might say, I don't know, Mike does big data. And I think another one was M Winkel, and maybe IC. And now what happens is when I submit this script is that it will look at all the files, but it will be only reading from the files that satisfy the predicate. So you should see now three files that it reads from. And obviously, because I scale this out, it will be reading from them in parallel. So while this is running, I think we are at the end of the 45 minutes.
We are pretty much, Mike. Yeah. So I guess lots of resources on where to go and learn. I think you've shared that with us. I think for me, the key takeaways here is this will scale over hundreds and hundreds of files, thousands of files. And I just specify parallelism when I run it, and I haven't had to spend hours building a cluster, and it's using a language I love.
Correct, yes. So as you can see, actually, I only have two stages here because I only have two files that it can query from. And this is true. I mean, you can do this over large amounts of data. Obviously, in this case, I have a little bit of a small data sets, but let me just show you maybe one thing here. I can go into one of our telemetry accounts here, look at the job history, and maybe see if I can find a big job to kind of just show you the complexity of what it can actually do. So this is going to take a while to load all the jobs that are running here. So for example, let's see, make that a little bit bigger. There's a 25-minute job here. Let me actually open that into a new window. So if you see how much data it read, it basically, in this case, read about 70 gigabytes of data and wrote about 46. Mm. So that's not really big data yet. Big data for us starts at the terabyte level. But you can see that the job graph is quite a bit more complicated here. Mm-hmm. I can just turn on maybe compute time heat maps. Mm-hmm. So I can see that there is a red blob here, which is doing an aggregation that is apparently a little bit more expensive than others. I can go into my diagnostics here, and I can load the profile for that job, which downloads more information about the job to my local machine. And then I can look at, for example, resource usage, and then I see how the job got scheduled.
And this is showing you how much use you're making of the parallelism throughout the life of the job.
Yes, correct.
Mike, this has been absolutely fantastic. I'm going to have to let you go, but we are going to have to get you back because, I love talking about this stuff, and I hope one of the viewers have really, really enjoyed this. So if we can just have a look at your final slides so where people can go and find some more. I'll wrap it up for the day.
Sure, let me go to the end here.
Thank you.
So additional resources that we have is we obviously have our uSQL GitHub communities page where you can find a lot of sample codes and can also contribute your own code if you want to. Then we have two blogs where I sometimes blog, both my own and the Azure Data Lake blog. And there are a lot of videos on Channel 9 of presentations that myself, Savine, and others in the team have been giving on Azure Data Lake and uSQL as well. Then we have documentations and articles available both on MSDN and on the Azure the docs page on Azure. And also there are, I think now, two magazine articles on uSQL available in the MSDN magazine from last year. Then we also have places where you can provide us feedback. So you can give us production wish list feedback at our user voice location, which is shortened here to aks.ms/adlfeedback. And then obviously we are hanging out on our Azure forum, on Azure Data Lake, as well as on Stack Overflow to answer any questions that people might have about the product itself and using it.
Thank you very much indeed for all those resources, Mike. And I'm going to bring today's Tech Days Online to a close now. Thank you again for taking your time, especially family time out from where I guess you're in Switzerland somewhere.
Yes.
Have a lovely time over there. Enjoy the driving. We'll speak about that soon. And to everybody watching Tech Days Online, please tune in again tomorrow. It gets even more interesting as we start looking at open source and the cloud with my very good friend Rick Hepworth, with a little bit of help from me. I've been Andrew Fryer. Thank you very much for listening.